Well, guys, we were supposed to have an episode for you for this week. Can we explain what happened?
The episode that we were going to have this week was deleted off of Vimeo and is now considered lost.
So there's actually a moral to the story. Whenever you see something, get it. Because you don't know if it's going to be there in a future day. And as we referred to in the last episode, the virtual Ed Sullivan show, which we released last Thursday, May 9th, that same day, it got yanked off of YouTube. And I've actually told the guys, I'm invoking a new clause. If you see something we need to cover, you can put it on the schedule immediately just in case it disappears, as a lot of media on YouTube and other video sites happen to be doing. They know there's a catch to that. The catch is not relevant to the show, but lesson learned for all of us. If you see something that you think is rare or you think is interesting, save it. There are applications out there that will save the videos. I use a good one. Greg, I think, uses either the same one or an equally good one. And I think Chico just hopped aboard the bandwagon today since this is a learning moment. So we're not going to give you an unnamed pilot, putting it out there in case maybe somehow we do it in the future. We're not going to do that. But oddly enough, what we're going to do is the show that we were going to do last week. That got replaced by the virtual Ed Sullivan show. Does that make any sense? We had a show slated for last Thursday. I called an audible. We did the virtual Ed Sullivan show. This week, the show that we wanted to do for episode 472 got yanked from Vimeo, and we are replacing it with the show that was originally in the spot for 470. I hope that's clear. I'm not going to draw out a flowchart for you guys.
Yes. So remember, kids, if you see something on YouTube, download it, or else this is what the YouTube slash video gods are going to do to that video.
Delete! 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 Delete!
Thank you, Matt Hardy. Now let's get to the episode.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Punisher! Control!
Tell me before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 472, Submission Number 2505, Fast Friends. Fast Friends was an unsold pilot for NBC that taped November 28, 1984.
Okay, okay. All right, and we were talking to you last time. Sports here. No sports, no sports.
History and science.
Okay. Our two contestants, Johanna Sartori and John Grant, want to make new friends from this special section of our studio audience, because whoever gets the most friends has the best chance to win $10,000 today on Fast Friends! And here's the host of Fast Friends, Bob Goins!
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks.
We're going from one NBC game show pilot to another one, it would seem. Because if you remember Monday, we talked about getting personal. Now we're all about making friends here. And the friends you make on this show could mean the difference between winning and losing, as you heard in the intro. The game itself was created by one of the masters of the game, former Jeopardy champion Jay Wolpert, also award-winning script writer and script doctor Jay Wolpert. Jay Wolpert's legendary in the game show field. We're talking about the new Price is Right, Shopping Spree, Hitman, and previous entry.
Or few, so it doesn't make it sound like you're deflating a tire of air.
One of the things about Jay Wolpert's games, though, they are not your conventional game shows. We've seen it in Double Dare, which was a return to format of the Isolation Booth quiz. We've seen it in Few, which was just absolutely madcap and wild and wacky. We've seen it in Shopping Spree, which was also wild and wacky. We've seen it on The Price is Right from 1994, which was basically the daytime version with primetime guts. And now we're seeing it here as one player is looking for a team of five people. And the more people they have on that team, the better their chances of winning the $10,000 prize. In the first round of the game, each contestant, there is like one sort of team captain, one in orange and one in blue. They have to go into a section of audience where they have to pick out one person that they think knows the answer to a question. And not only that, they have to, out of 30 seconds, allot how much time they have to make a fast friend. The controlling player would go to the audience member of his or her choice, and then the host would ask the question, and the choice would answer. If it's correct, they're on the team. No time wasted, we move right along. However, if they are incorrect, the timer begins to go, and they have to find a fast friend. The first audience member to answer the question correctly wins $200 and became that player's teammate. However, if time ran out, it was a wasted question and it was thrown out. The round continued until all the questions were played or all 30 seconds were used, and the last question automatically used the remaining time on both sides.
I think we need a little bit of clarification here. The captain of the team, they put up a number of seconds to get an answer to a question. If they got the correct answer immediately, the time's gone. So if they wagered, say, 7 seconds and they got the answer immediately, the time is taken off the clock, but you're down to 23 seconds to use for the remaining players. Plus, also, if the answer is incorrect, the captain can go to other audience members on the floor, on their section of the floor, to get a correct answer again before the wagered time runs out. And if the time runs out, there is a lost opportunity for a fast friend.
Now that we have our teams set up, we go into round two, an elimination contest to decide which player would play for the $10,000. It begins with a multiple choice question. First team captain to buzz in with the correct answer won the question. Otherwise, the opposing team won it. The winner of the toss-up would decide to either have their team go first or force their opponents to go first. More multiple choice questions would follow, starting with the player in the last most position and working their way to the team captain. Each question with three possible answers, the first two being random items and the third always being neither. You choose the correct answer, you stay in the game. But if you choose a wrong answer, you are knocked out. However, if the team captain should miss the question, and this is the only exception to this rule, if the team captain misses a question, the furthest player was knocked out, unless, of course, they were the only one left, making him or her vulnerable. The first team to be knocked out of the game lost, but the losing audience members, the fast friends, if you will, they kept their $200, and the team captain received a consolation prize. the winning side would receive an additional 300 per head for a total of 500, and the winning team captain won a prize of his or her own, plus a chance to play the bonus round photo finish for $10,000. In photo finish, the champion is shown a picture of a famous film. Then there were shown 8 more pictures, all of famous people, and only one of them fit a certain criteria. The remaining 7 did not. The object of the game was to spot the 7 wrong pictures, leaving only the right picture on the board. Each incorrect picture won $100 to the champion. Choosing the correct picture ended the game, but choosing all 7 won $10,000. So let's talk about the personnel. We already talked about Jay Wolpert, legendary bio, sadly no longer with us. The host of this show, also a legend. Wheel of Fortune, Blackout, That's the Question, The Home Shopping Game, that one episode of Perfect Strangers that they didn't want us to know it took place on the set of Funhouse, but it totally did. And also quite a radio personality. The one, the only, Bob Goen.
You mentioned all those credits, and you didn't mention his most popular one. Entertainment Tonight?
Yeah, he did do that, didn't he?
For a while, yeah.
You know who also did Entertainment Tonight?
John Tesh, Tar Heel in the House. There, I said it.
No, you say it by his proper name. John Tesh, the composer of the greatest theme song in the history of mankind, Round Ball Rock.
Tar Heel in the House.
No, wait a second. Greg, I'm sorry. You're wrong. Call him by his proper name, as Triumphant Insult Comic Dog said, Teshy!
Teshy!
Oh, sure. No Tar Heel in the House for Teshy? Okay.
Tar Heel in the House.
I love that you say Teshy in the same tone that Vic said, Bucci.
Well, everybody knows that Vic Dunlop sounded exactly like Triumph the Dog. Not really. But also remember that one game we played where I had that questionnaire up or whatever, the celebrity test or whatever, and said his favorite show was the Slap Maxwell Story. Oh, that was a fun 15 minutes that we wasted there. So go find that Slap Maxwell Story. We didn't do it that long ago. Definitely in the 400s. Go find it. Listen to us playing that 20 questions game. It was something.
And as your announcer, legendary announcer, talking about Match Game, Price is Right, Blockbusters, Play the Percentages, the all-new dating game, the newlywed game, Card Sharks, Trivia Trap, Star Wars. I don't even think we talked about Star Wars on this podcast, have we?
Well, now we
maybe an idea for next year's pilot month.
And also the host of one season of Let's Make a Deal from 1990, the pride and joy of Lake Charles, Louisiana, Bob Hilton. But yeah, this show was seemingly engineered to at least be a frenetic trivia quiz that would just fit in like a glove on NBC in the mid-80s. So what happened?
Sucked.
Pretty much. Like I said, a man much wiser than any one of us once said, if you cannot explain your premise for a game show in one sentence, it is too complex. Such it would be for Fast Friends. However, normally when we talk about things on Pilot Month, we talk about the pilot, and then that's it. There's no end to the story. There's no whatever, what have you. But this is not the end of the story. Because in 1991... the BBC actually picked up a version of Fast Friends to run on BBC One for 14 episodes hosted by Les Dawson.
Okay, now I think we actually need to get an equivalent to the croc block for the UK. It ran almost half a cheap, 30 episodes. Sure, that works for me. That's going to be our measuring stick for British episodes now. Cheaps.
Well, that's something considering an average British show lasts like 20 episodes for the entire run. You're at like 5 or 6 seasons.
I think that's for scripted shows primarily. I get like, let's say Doctor Who. How many episodes of Doctor Who are there in any given season? 8?
No, usually like 13. I'm just saying, for example, Sherlock has like 3 episodes a season.
But they're all long episodes, Greg.
I know that, but still, it's 3 episodes a season.
But also at the same time, let's remember one of the most popular British shows in history, Fawlty Towers, had 1 season and what, like 6 episodes?
Actually, 2 seasons with 6 episodes each.
Okay, but still, 12 episodes for maybe one of the most popular British series ever. And I mean, we can even take it a step further, talking about Benny Hill. Now, admittedly, Benny Hill, they only did like every 3 months, but that's still 4 episodes a year for 20 years. I don't even think there's 80 episodes of Benny Hill out there. There may be. I've got the DVDs somewhere. But still, you know, it's very common for British shows, especially BBC shows, to do like 6-episode seasons.
The first few seasons of Red Dwarf were 6 episodes long. And also, and I'm just learning this, the first season of Keeping Up Appearances was 6 episodes long. It ran in total 5 seasons, but only 44 episodes. And people loved it!
Also, taking a quick little look, it does appear that Fast Friends, at least to start, aired on Saturday nights. And if you know British television, they enjoy showing their game shows on Saturday nights. However, the last episode, it says it aired June 28th of 1991. That was a Friday. So maybe it moved time slots? Who knows?
There was one key difference between the American pilot and the British run of the show. In the final round, they didn't have like a movie or a set of actors. They had a selection of answers to a question on a video wall. Only one of the answers was incorrect, and this must be avoided in order to ensure victory. So each of the friends would suggest an answer, and the captain would decide whether to go with it or choose an alternate answer. So we're basically playing the opening few rounds of Greed at this point. But if the team chose all the correct answers, the captain won a trip. Otherwise, everybody won a mini TV and an address book. And also, the captain won £25 for each correct answer. And the friends who gave correct answers also won £25. It was the BBC in 1991. What can you say?
You're not going to believe this. Something I just discovered. Do you know who provided the theme and some musical cues for the American pilot that we just talked about?
No.
You're not going to believe this. I don't think this is a joke. Frank Stallone.
Wait, who did musical cues for this pilot? You guessed it. Frank Stallone.
If I'm not mistaken, they used Far From Over as the theme song.
I could actually believe that because other pilots, specifically Jay Wolpert pilots, have used actual like pop music. The Hitman theme was a song, Worlds Away, done by Pablo Cruz. And another Wolpert pilot, I can't remember the name of it. Oh, it's a great pilot. I think it's fascinating. But they used an Earth, Wind, and Fire song. The pilot was for a show called Pie in the Sky, also from 1984. And the song used by Earth, Wind, and Fire is Rock That. And it's a really great song. I could definitely see that song used as a game show theme. Also, it goes back to our lesson from earlier. Download it when you see it. Pie in the Sky is not on YouTube anymore.
So maybe it's a Wolpert thing, using pop music as theme songs and then maybe sort of modifying them enough to make them unique, yet they still sound like 70% of the actual song. That makes sense?
Yeah. And yes, the theme song for Fast Friends, surprised I didn't pick this up when we played the intro, is Frank Stallone's Far From Over.
And actually, it sounds like the commercial outro music, believe it or not, another song from another very popular artist. Bette Midler's You Gotta Have Friends. So I think my theory about Jay Wolpert pilots having actual, like, commercially released music, like pop songs, is a valid theory.
I have to schedule for early 1985. Sail of the Century was at 10:30. Wheel of Fortune was at 11. Scrabble was at 11:30. Super Password was at noon. Followed by Search for Tomorrow, Days of Our Lives, Another World, and Santa Barbara. Because Santa Barbara, that would have been the new kid on the block. But at 10 o'clock was the open spot. And if I'm not mistaken, Mike, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, NBC had a choice between Fast Friends and Time Machine.
That's what I was going to say. Time Machine premiered January of 85. And let's remember, hey, I'm going to cue up this nugget because this never gets old. John Davidson said they're going to be there for a very long time. Isn't that right, John Davidson?
If you're watching us for the first time, maybe you don't know, this is our very first show, but we plan to be here for a very long time.
13 weeks, folks.
That's pretty much what happened. Fast Friends was confined to the dustbins of history until 1991 when BBC picked it up for an abbreviated run. But don't weep for anybody here. Jay Wolpert, Bob Goen, and Bob Hilton, they all went on to do just fine, okay? They're all legends in the game show realm. And this was just a speed bump to that legendary status. Bob Goen, I believe, still touring with Wheel of Fortune Live, if I'm not mistaken. Bob Hilton, semi-retired, I want to say?
He'd be in his 80s now. I would hope he's at least semi-retired.
And sadly, Jay Wolpert, no longer with us, but left a legacy of great programming that spanned from the 70s with Double Dare to the late 90s with Match Game, which would have probably gotten a second season if the writing wasn't so lazy. I'm going to die on this hill, y'all.
Did we also forget that the shuffle format of Millionaire was sort of like created by Jay Wolpert?
I did forget that.
No, I did not know this.
If you watch the episodes, I'm guessing they're from, boy, at this point, it's got to be about 2012, 2013. So at least a decade ago. The shuffle format, they credited Jay Wolpert, I think, more of an advisor than like a producer role. But he did get a credit during the season or seasons. I don't think it lasted more than a season, that shuffle format.
But even if Fast Friends did go to series, it would have had to go up against the $25,000 pyramid and Press Your Luck and The Price is Right and Family Feud.
Which is all but dead in 1985. But let's remember, we're looking at the 10 a.m. time slot, so the only thing it would have really gone up against was the $25,000 pyramid. And whatever reruns ABC was showing, because I think Family Feud was like at the 11 or 11:30 hour.
At 10 o'clock, ABC gave that hour to the affiliates.
But it still would have died at the hands of Pyramid.
But that's pretty much all we have on Fast Friends. I mean, the show seemed fast enough. It seemed friendly enough. But unfortunately, in 1985, UK version aside, it was almost a thing on TV.
Hey, you know what didn't get killed by the $25,000 pyramid?
Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour.
That got killed by something else.
That got killed by NBC when Santa Barbara was ready.
It's time for this weekend match game. Hollywood Square. Our history.
It's now week 29. And as I said last week, this is another theme week. And I do think this is the last theme week during the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour run. It is 50s week. And you had some really big names from the 50s. Troy Donahue, Fabian, Eleanor Donahue. I almost want to make a case for her for the Hall of Fame just by being Chris Elliott's mother on Get a Life. Just throwing that out there, not putting her in just yet, but if she could like put up with Chris Elliott's antics, she deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But also Bob Denver from The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, and David Nelson. And this would have been like a year and a half before David Nelson passed away. Because remember, he died in a plane crash on New Year's Eve of 1985. But also you had Angela Cartwright, Ed Cookie Burns. Good thing there's not a wheel in this game, or else who knows what would have happened. And then the eighth person on the panel, legend from the 1950s,
Lester Black.
The only thing 50s about that guy is the fact that he was born in 1950.
And the fact that his chin is 50 inches long.
That explains a lot.
Well, and his ego's just as big, Greg. There you go. That's for you. So this week, we did have Gene Wood for the Monday and Tuesday episodes, but the Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday shows were announced not by Johnny Olsen, sorry, Greg, but Rich Jeffries. We actually had a champ this week, Maria Rasul. She left on the Thursday show as the all-time money winner on Match Game Hollywood Squares with $66,350. But she didn't retire. She got beat. In terms of big money this week, well, you could probably make a guess hearing that she left with $66,000 that we had some big wins this week. On Monday, presuming this is the same woman, and I think this matches up, she won $10,000 with Eleanor Donahue. And then the next day, Maria Rasul won $20,000 with Troy Donahue. And then the biggie. This is what put her over the top. The Wednesday episode, she won $30,000 with Fabian. She hit the biggie, the 1,000 times the 30. But then, to make it even better, the person that beat her on that Thursday episode, he won $10,000 with Eleanor Donahue. And then nothing on Friday, Saturday. So you had $70,000 going out the door that week. Pretty good week, if you ask me. And not even joking, I remember seeing at least one or two of these episodes back when they originally aired, 40 years ago. These are 40-year-old memories coming back to me. I remember Fabian having the 30 and winning $30,000. Good times. You can see how productive my childhood was back in 1984. So next week, it's going to be week 30. We have a lot of familiar names coming back. And actually, taking a look at who's on next week, I really think there's only one person who has not been on the show before. And there's an interesting story behind that. We'll get to that next week. But for now, let's wrap up this episode, Chico.
Well, if you want to be fast friends with us, you can hop on over to itwasathingontv.com where you can listen to the 471 episodes that preceded this one. Also, they're waiting for you. Instant reactions, delayed reactions, minisodes, live watches, the whole shebang. And speaking of friends, we love to have friends on social media. And you can find us on all social media at It Was A Thing On TV, except for Facebook, where we are at It Was A Thing On TV Podcast, and Mastodon, where we are at It Was A Thing On TV at tvwatch.party.
And if you're listening to this on Friday on Voice of Nation Pop, thank you for listening to our two episodes this week. And man, I gotta say, it's been a hell of a week trying to find this pilot, trying to make good on today with all the situation. Because, oh man, like we said, the lesson, download it to make sure it doesn't get deleted, or else Matt Hardy will go after you.
And also, remember to subscribe to the podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. We're talking about Apple Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Audible, our indie streamers. We love our indie streamers. Podbean, don't forget, we're also on Podbean. And also, we are on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe. Don't be coy with that notification bell, too, so you don't miss any of our content, including the continuation, week 3 of Pilot Month. And guys, I don't know about you, but last year we had a really decent pilot, but it wasn't picked up for series. So what did they do? They tried again, and somehow they made it worse. And also, I'm not going to say somebody here has a birthday coming up, but I got him a present of a broken lamp. I wonder what he plans on doing with it.
Well, thankfully, Chico, I don't have a cat, so it won't be knocked down. Could you imagine if it got knocked down, let's say, a genie came out of the lamp?
And not just any genie.
Oh, yeah. Okay, can we just blame the noodles and get it out of the way? Stupid cats! She's not stupid.
Like, this genie wouldn't do anything stupid like have an ATM in my house or something.
See, I'm laughing because I know what's going on. But we have the continuation, pilot number 5 of Pilot Month, and Greg is playing his Money in the Bank. That's coming up next week, right here on It Was a Thing on TV. For Greg, for Mike, I'm Chico. Thank you ever so much for listening. Please be kind to one another, and we will see you lovely people for the next one.
Wow. Now, hold on.
What the hell is that?
I was doing a sexy roar.
Roar.
Where does sexy come into play with fast friends? What type of friends are you making?
I'm wanting to switch it up. Okay, now, hold on. I got the close.
We are back! That's we right. are back! We are getting Doug back!
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean, the three best friends that anybody could have. The friends, the three best friends. And...